Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It's this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. Quarantine in Australia is drawing to an end. The social media ban on players, especially in Adelaide, is drawing to an end. Tennis is about to start. Next week we'll do full Australian Open 2021 preview talk. This week, though, we have a North American guest. She is fresh from getting her COVID vaccine. The guest is elite, and we are talking elite. We're talking Roger Federer-level elite. It is the elite eye doctor and eye surgeon, Renee Richards. Dr. Richards, of course, is also known, better known, as a tennis player and, above all, the transgender groundbreaker. So, this full disclosure, first of all, this is a conversation between friends. This is not a debate show. We've got to know each other in recent years, and I have to say this is, if not the, certainly one of the most fascinating people I've ever come across. For starters, again, imagine taking pride in one facet of your life and then being known to the outside world for something else completely different. So I encourage Dr. Richards to come on because she has a forthcoming book out. We will link it. And we talked about the book. The book is about her medical practice and healthcare in the 21st century. This is not a memoir. It's not a meditation on trans life or the trans athlete or about being, I think it was the Times of London called the Caitlyn Jenner of the 70s. This is a medical book. So this is, again, this is just an extraordinary human being. We talk about the book. We talk about Dr. Richards' relationship with tennis, with golf. She still plays. Inevitably, we talk about her role as a trans pioneer and, I guess a warning here, this is it's perhaps not what you might think. She surprised me and I suspect would perhaps surprise some of you as well. She has views that might get challenged in some quarters, but she is entitled to those views, probably singularly so. So we talk about a variety of topics here. This is a wide-ranging conversation with an absolute pioneer. That's our windup. Here, without further ado, the good doctor, Renee Richards.
Well, first, I'm happy to get you the day after you were vaccinated. So I congratulate you. That's good news. How are you feeling?
Well, I feel okay now. During the night, I was a little bit feverish, and I still have a sore arm, and I'm not going to go swing any golf clubs today. But I'm very fortunate in being able to have gotten the vaccination and that I got my second shot, and nothing terrible is going on. And I'm going to be able to go back to my office next week because I've got my second shot now. And that's been, that's been depressing for me, sitting around, no golf, no tennis, no office, just talking with some friends and doing emails. And I'm not such a good reader, although I did read a very good book last week.
Oh, what was that?
It was called The Undoing Project. Written by Michael Lewis, who wrote Moneyball.
Sure, the behavioral economist. That was great.
Exactly. You do know about it. God, I figured you might. Yeah, they invented behavioral economics, and they won the Nobel Prize for it. That's and the book is sensational.
Great book. You have a book as well, though. Let's talk. Let's jump ahead in our questions. Let's talk about your book. When is it coming out? What's it about?
My book is about the final year of the century, and it's called Diary 1999, and it's a diary of my life in 1999, every single day. And it's basically my medical practice and what it was like for a doctor in the last year of the century with the changes in the medical care delivery and Obamacare and managed care and all the things that were going on at that time. And I've documented all of that. And I've gotten some commentaries from other doctors that I'm close to for their opinions about it too. And there's also personal stuff in there because I talk about moving up here to the country and building our house and living both in the city and in the country before I finally gave up the New York office and the New York apartment, and I just remained up here. And it's a punctuation for young doctors and also for patients to learn about what the changes were at the end of the last century.
So just to be clear, people are going to say, oh, Renee Richards is writing a book, and then they're going to find out it's a medical book, and it's about changes to the healthcare community and to technology with eye surgery. And
you got the idea. You got the idea, because it's not going to appeal to a segment of the population that's going to hear Renee Richards, and if they are maybe old enough to have remembered the name, will think strictly in terms of a psychosexual revolution or transgender or something to do with that, and it really has nothing to do with that. And it's basically a book about medical practice. In fact, it's been given a grant for the publication by the Strabismus Foundation. The Strabismus Foundation, the word strabismus means abnormalities of the eye muscles. Kids that are cross-eyed, wall-eyed, see double, have lazy eye, amblyopia, and all that. And the Strabismus Foundation has given a grant to help publish this. Otherwise, it wouldn't be published. It wouldn't be published by, let's say, my last publisher, Simon & Schuster. They would have no interest in doing that.
Did I hear right that you said now that you're vaccinated, you might go back into the office? I mean, someone had told me they thought you still, you were not retired. You still practice on occasion. Is that right?
It's not on occasion. It's every week.
Oh, wow.
I stopped when our office manager got COVID about 2 months ago. I stopped because I was at serious risk then and got very upset and very nervous about it. So I stopped 2 months ago. And now that I've got my second vaccination, I'm going back next week. So I'll be back in the office next week. I don't operate, but I still see patients in the office. Yeah.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You are too modest to say this, so I'll say it for you. You are and are renowned as absolutely world-class in your field. I mean, I know people who were going to go to Europe to have surgery for their children's eyes and basically said, well, I don't need to go to Europe because the best practitioner's here in Manhattan. I'm just going to go see Dr. Richards. What is it like for you to be world-class in a sector and that's not what you're best known for? I mean, I can't imagine what that's like.
Well, first of all, I don't know that I'm world-class in eye muscle surgery. I mean, I guess I was pretty well-known in my day, but I don't think we have a ranking for that like we do in the ATP or the WTA. So I don't know exactly where I rank. I mean, maybe there's someone in Switzerland or in Brazil who's doing better eye muscle surgery than I ever did. So, you know, I take exception to that, but I understand your question. Your question is, I mean, let's say I was a very good eye muscle surgeon and took very good care of kids with eye muscle problems, that's not what I'm known for. I mean, you know, I'm known for the Rene Richards who was discovered in La Jolla playing a tournament after I had had my surgery to become Rene. And that's what I'll ever always be known for. And I think about that sometimes. I think about morbidly my obituary. It'll be transsexual tennis player Dr. Rene Richards dies, you know. And I can't undo that. I mean, that's a person's infamy. And that's the lot in life that a lot of people have to suffer with. And the general public doesn't know what their most important parts of their life were.
That's how you see it, that your most important parts of your life were your professional work and not pioneering or something like that.
Absolutely. I mean, the pioneering is important. I don't want to totally minimize it. But, you know, I think that I was given an award a couple of years ago by the Horace Mann School where I attended in probably the five most important years of my educational life. I mean, it's where Billy Barr went, and it's where Elliot Spitzer went, and it's where the Blinkens went, and all that. So they gave me a prize, the Distinguished Alum Prize for the year. And it was a very important thing for me. And I had to give a speech. And when I gave the speech, I said that my life was really like all Gaul divided into three parts. It was medicine, it was sports, and it was human rights. So I know that I'm going to be known in the public more for the human rights part of it. And that's okay with me too, because that's important.
Do you feel, I mean, there is, obviously this is a hot button topic. I mean, just this week, Biden issued an executive order about the military and trans rights in the military, basically undoing, repealing Trump's ban on transgender military service. Do you feel pressure to get involved? I don't know where sort of you are vis-a-vis these debates within the trans community. Are you being asked to comment? Are you being asked to get involved?
All the time.
How do you
and
mean?
I refuse. I don't do it. The only thing that I've agreed to in recent times is when Martina prevailed on me to attach my name to some legislation that she's working on with Donna DeVerona and Billie Jean or something to do with transgenders. And I said, okay, put my name on it too. But I have nothing to do with that stuff. And I really have stayed out of it. I mean, just on the subject that you mentioned, the transgenders in the military. I mean, you realize that when I was in the military, it was in 1963. And I was Richard Raskin then. I wasn't Renee. And there's no way that somebody who had become Renee would have been able to serve in the military at that time. And I had a wonderful experience in the Navy in my tour of active duty. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Among the most important things that I've done, even though it was only 2 years of active duty and then six more in the reserve. But I'm so far removed from the current climate of what's going on. I don't even know some of the words. I mean, to me, transgender, okay, I can go with that instead of pansexual. That's okay with me. I know the guy that invented the term, John Mani from Johns Hopkins psychology department. So that's okay. But I mean, when I hear things like non-binary or people called they, if it's a singular person, or a Q, I don't like that word. I'm happy that I'm not part of any of that. I really am.
I think people would be fascinated to hear that. I mean, even, I don't know, you mentioned Martina. I think we should be, there seems to be a real split among retired athletes, but also broader than that. I mean, Martina and Donna DeVerona seem to suggest we need to consider, physiology and physiological differences when we decide whether trans athletes are playing male sports or female sports. You have Billie Jean King on the other side, Megan Rapinoe. It does seem like our new president, who basically seemed to suggest if you identify as a female, play female sports.
Well, that's not right either. You know, I mean, that's stupid.
You don't think so?
Well, of course not. I mean, if you're going to take a 16-year-old junior in high school boy and put him on a girls' tennis team, it's insane. Now, if you tell me you've got a 16-year-old boy who's been on hormone blockers at the very beginning of puberty and hasn't developed the muscle mass and the size of a ordinary, normal XY male, that's another story. But you can't just have somebody announce, I'm a girl, so I want to play on the girls' team. Come on, you know better than that. And so does everybody who's got a brain.
Well, I think I think people will say that at their own peril.
They want at their own peril. Say what at their own peril.
I think there's a fairly large cohort that says if people identify as one gender, that's the gender they should be entitled to play sports in, and that we're not really taking opportunities away from girls and from women.
But you are. Of course you are.
I think one thing that people don't always realize in your story that I think is important is how old you were when you transitioned.
Well, that was a big part of it, too. If I was a 22-year-old transsexual, I would have won every match that I ever played in the women's. But I was a 47-year-old, as Elena Stasi used to say, what are they worried about? She's old enough to be their mother.
I think you told me that. You said if I had done this in my 20s, I would have been a Wimbledon champion.
Yeah, right. That's
right. I don't want to get you in any trouble, but you realize how I mean, Martina can talk about this firsthand. You realize how this is a charged hot button issue, as we say.
You mean I don't mind that I'm not in the public anymore. I can remember when I was more vocal, when there was a time that a Canadian mountain biker was trying to gain some acceptance playing, who was a transgender, and the headline in the newspaper was, Doc says, do as I say, not as I do, referring to me.
I'm talking about you.
Those were the days when I got into trouble for opening my mouth. Now, that doesn't make any difference to me. I'm 86 years old. What do I care?
I want to ask you about longevity. I was kidding last time. We spoke a few years ago and I said, how are you? Are you hitting balls? And you said, do you mean golf balls or tennis balls? Because you do both. You still play golf, you still go to work. What do you think's enabled you to do that, as you say, at age 86? I mean, it's fairly remarkable.
I think that one thing is good luck. Another is heredity. My father lived to be 100. My mother died of cancer, of course, when she was only 61, but I think your genes have a lot to do with your longevity. So I was lucky to have, or I am lucky to have good genes. And also, you know, I talk about this with Arlene a lot, that we both think that the fact that I've been on estrogen replacement for ever since I was in my 30s. That's given me some extra health too. There's got to be something about the hormonal effect too. I take the weakest dose of estradiol that you can take, 0.0375 milligrams, as a skin patch once a week. I still do it.
That's fascinating. And you're still hitting golf balls and tennis. Are you still playing tennis?
No, I don't play anymore because my knees started to bother me when I was playing. I was still coaching up until a few years ago with a coaching partner of mine, Peter Fiore. But I stopped because my knees were bothering me and it interfered with my golf game, which I became addicted to. So I play golf almost every day that I can, and on days that I can't play, I swing the club on my tennis court. So I do that, and that's, I think, kept me pretty healthy and keeps me going. And I belong to a ladies' league at the club up here. We have 25 really wonderful, it's a wonderful club. They're just great people, and we play every Wednesday in the league, and then we play with each other several times the rest of the week too. So I do that. And I go for walks. We have a new little Airedale puppy. As soon as he's a little bigger, we're going to do power walking on the road around the reservoir. And Arlene cooks wonderful food for me every single day, all day long. So I'm fortunate to be healthy. I'm knock on wood, but we'll see what happens.
And you're still a tennis fan. We hear from you.
I'm still a tennis fan. Are you kidding? I watch every match. I comment on it to everybody except for the public. the thing that gets me about being a tennis fan, for one thing, is that there's always this raging argument about who's the greatest of all time. I guess that happens in every sport, but it seems to be even more prevalent, these arguments, when it comes to tennis. Not so much the women, but for the men, because we've had these three wonderful players for the past few years. And it's so hard to have to chime in on that because I wish that we wouldn't have to chime in on it because the three of them are so great. And we've had such a wonderful time having them in our tennis lives at the same time. I mean, there were eras where there weren't so many great, great players. I asked Bobby Riggs once who was the greatest of all time, and he told me, well, you have to go by decades. He says, you have to go by decades because of changes in conditioning, and racket technology, and strings, and all the rest of it, and training. He says, so you have to go by decades. And in the first half of the last century, there was Bill Tilden, and then there was all the rest. And then he said there were the 60s, and you had the 50s and Laver and Rosewall and Hoge and Gonzalez and Kramer. And then you got into the 60s and then you started to a little bit of a hiatus until you got Bjorn and John McEnroe and Jimmy Connors. And then you got into even Lendl and then Stassi. And then you got more into Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi. And all of them, any one of them could have been considered the greatest of all time, but I don't think you should do that. And I try not to do it.
It's interesting to me that you did that for the men. Let's stay there. I mean, Federer, Nadal, Djokovic. We don't have to go down the road of who's the greatest, but does one of them appeal to you more than the others? I mean, one of them sort of viscerally you find more appealing when you watch them play?
Well, I mean, for pure artistry, you have to go with Federer. And for pure physicality, you have to go with Nadal. And for pure concept of the game and workmanship, you have to go with Djokovic. In terms of their personalities, they're totally different personalities.
Right.
One seems to get into trouble for anything that he might say. The other one can say nothing that's wrong at all. And the third one is probably, Rafa Nadal is a very high person. I talk about people in terms of being high people or low people. He's a very high person. His character is very high. He doesn't denigrate other people. He doesn't get into the fray where it comes to criticizing other people. He's always out there up front and doing his utmost to do the best that he can. And, he may be the highest character. Of course, he's left-handed too, so I'm prejudiced.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you're just prejudiced towards lefties. No, that was that's a great summation of tennis past and present. What do you think of the women's game right now?
Well, I think that the women's game has been great over the past couple of decades. I mean, immediately comes to mind Billie Jean and Chrissy and Martina and Steffi. But the era of the Williamses and Serena has been a fabulous decade or more. Before them, you have to go back to Maureen Connolly and then the half a century before that, which nobody's ever heard of. But you could start with Maureen and then go to Chrissy and Billie Jean and Martina. And who am I leaving out? I'm not sure.
Steffi Graf.
Yeah, I got her. I put her in.
Yeah, I mean, essentially from Steffi, Monica Seles, of course, is...
Yes, right, that's right.
And then...
It would have been in there. Yeah.
The last, I mean, it's hard to believe, but I'm talking to someone who played in their 40s as well. But, we're talking about a quarter century of Williams family domination, which is just...
Yes, yeah, right. No, absolutely. I mean, she's right there. I kind of like to see her break Margaret Court's record for a lot of reasons. But for one reason, because... Margaret's record, although it's fabulous, 24 victories, several of them were in Australian Opens that were most of the best players didn't travel down to Australia to play in them. But I mean, she did a lot for tennis. She was one of the first to start really training physically and become a good physical specimen.
I still can't get it. I mean, I think this is still fascinating. If somebody said, Renee Richards wants to see Margaret Court's record overtaken, I think people would say, yeah, I could imagine that. And if you said, well, why? People would not have suggested it was because you thought Margaret Court played in Australian Open draws that weren't an apples and orange comparison. I mean, I think people would assume, like Martina, you had some real issues with Margaret Court because of...
No, don't assume that. Don't assume that. Yeah, I mean, she could have been totally reactionary, which she probably is. And I still would have said that her record was sensational if more players had gone down there and played in those Australian Opens.
No, I think that's my point. I'm so fascinated by this idea that you don't necessarily self-identify as a pioneer. You would rather talk about your triumphs in eye surgery and then your ranking as a tennis player, or your, what a lot of people I think would consider your pioneering on a topic that in 2021 has a great deal of resonance. I mean, I think that's really a fascinating part of this whole story.
Well, I'm too much of a dinosaur to be current with the current arguments about all the gender stuff, because my time is different. I mean, nowadays people come out on television and announce, now I am a woman, I'm having surgery to become a woman. That wasn't my time. That wasn't my life. My life was if somebody, very few people, in fact, did something like that, they would disappear. They would merge into the woodwork. They would never be seen again. They would be living perfectly quiet, unknown lives. It's totally different now. I don't understand it. I don't understand a lot of it. Like I said, I don't understand the mixture of all of it. I don't understand non-binary and all of that.
I find this so fascinating. I think people, and I think a lot of other people positioned the way you are would be happy to be considered a pioneer. And you essentially have said that's, you said this to me once before. You said, look, that was decades ago. I'm on to different things now. This is not how I identify myself. I think it's really fascinating. I think I suspect you might draw some criticism for what you said about female athletes needing to fully transition before they can play women's sports. But I think you're it's really admirable that this happened to you, and you may be associated as a pioneer, but that's not how you want to live your life, and that's not how you want to be remembered.
Well, I don't know about being remembered. I can just tell you about leading my life. I mean, I can't control how I'm going to be remembered.
So tell me, let's close just telling us how we can get this book and when it's coming out, where we can order it, and how people can read it.
You'll be able to order it on Barnes & Noble and Amazon. It's going to be published by Hallard Press, H-A-L-L-A-R-D, Hallard Press. And it's a small publishing outfit, and they are getting this grant from the Strabismus Foundation to publish it. And people can get it on Amazon or, or Barnes & Noble, probably some other sites as well. And I mean, it's a pretty interesting book about one doctor's life in medicine and at home in the last year of the last century.
That's great. I think people will be interested to read this on a number of levels. I think that's great. Last question, who wins the Australian Open?
Men, women, I think Serena wins it.
Really?
I think Serena gets her 24th. This would be the easiest venue for her to do it, I think.
Why's that?
Well, I don't think that Brianna Andreescu is going to be there, and I don't think that a few other players are going to be there, and the field is probably not as strong as the one that will be at the French or at Wimbledon. I think she might have a good shot at Wimbledon, too. You know, Naomi Osaka is a wonderful player, and I don't know what happened to Andreescu, but Naomi Osaka could be a favorite, too. Probably either Serena or Naomi Osaka. For the men, you know, these five young players are definitely threatening Djokovic and Nadal. Federer's not playing, so it's just Djokovic and Nadal. And if you've looked at Dominic Thiem and Tsitsipas and Zverev playing these guys in the past year, you must know that they have the ability to beat them. They just haven't done it in a Grand Slam. And I would say I wouldn't bet against Dominic Thiem. I think he's a sensational player. But, you know, I wouldn't bet against Djokovic either. Djokovic has the winning record against everybody he's ever played in, against.
He has won, do I have this right? He's won the Australian Open as many times as Federer has won Wimbledon.
Yeah, something like that. And he's got a winning record against Federer, and he's got a winning record against Nadal.
Exactly. All right. We should.
But I don't know anything about tennis. Don't go by me.
Oh, stop. Come on. You'll be watching on Tennis Channel.
Yes, I will.
This is great. I was glad.
Put the mute on.
Oh, don't say that. That's a conversation.
No, I listen sometimes.
This was a pleasure. I'm happy you got vaccinated. I'm happy we were able to catch up.
Thank you.
I'm happy you do this on your terms. You're fearless about backlash, and I hope we can do this again when your book comes out.
That would be wonderful. All right, John. Thank you. It's been fun for me to go back. Anytime I'm able to start talking tennis, you know, I get wound up, and it's hard to turn me off. So.
Next time we'll talk about why you mute Tennis Channel, but that's a conversation for another time.
Oh, okay.
Be well. Go hit some golf balls.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Be well. Be safe.
Okay, thanks to Renee Richards. I hope you enjoyed that. I certainly did. Again, this is just a towering figure I suspect we will be marveling at for centuries. 86 years old now, still practicing, still hitting golf balls, still watching tennis, sometimes with the sound down. Little interest in playing any sort of ceremonial role, but it's probably worth considering how far we've come with trans rights. And when we tell her story, remind ourselves this was in the 1970s. So that was enjoyed that conversation. Hope you did too. Thanks as always to the guest, Dr. Renee Richards. Thanks to Jamie for her behind-the-scenes sorcery, as always. Next week, we'll talk 2021 Australian Open. More full disclosure, I will be going to L.A., not to Melbourne, but to Tennis Channel in Los Angeles for broadcasting. So we will have all the coverage on Tennis Channel, not from on site, but it will not in any way be compromised. We have a new studio. We'll have another guest next week. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can leave a review, rate this podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll do this again in 7 days.